Welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to the most important, fastest growing, and now largest segment of society. To those who know that the world's political, religious, military, economic, academic, and media institutions have grown corrupt, that they are wholly counterproductive, and that they cannot be fixed. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion anytime over the next 3 hours, it's toll-free, 877-300-7645. At the end of our second hour yesterday, we were continuing to tell the story, a despicable story, of what happened in the Dominican Republic. And we did so for two reasons. One is to show how far up the food chain sexual perverts thrive in the Roman Catholic Church. The gentleman we are investigating here is, at least was, an archbishop. He reported directly to Pope Francis. In fact, it was Francis himself who swept him out of the Dominican Republic once the Roman Catholic Church and the Pope came to know for certain that he was a sexual pervert preying on young boys, and that he was using church resources and church deacons to procure children to sexually abuse. When they discovered that, rather than turn over that information to the Dominican Republic so that he could be prosecuted, so that the families of those victims and the victims themselves might have some sense of closure, no, the Pope of the Roman pathetic church claimed diplomatic immunity and secreted him out of the Dominican Republic and back to the Vatican, where he is a free man. It tells us that not only is sexual perversity in the Roman Catholic Church pervasive all the way up at the archbishop level, and I would be willing to bet my last dollar that there is sexual perversity among cardinals, and we know that in history there have been brothels that have been arranged by popes in the Vatican, but that this pope who finally said, you know, we're not going to tolerate it, it's wrong, and said that we are going to have a new plan and we're going to turn over the perpetrators to the local authorities and all evidence and be transparent in this regard, did exactly the opposite. So we're going to continue to review his story until its completion, and then I'm going to tell you a new development that occurred after our program yesterday. Archbishop Weselowski began sending a young Dominican church deacon to procure young children for him. Law enforcement in the Dominican Republic affirm. The deacon, Francisco Javier Osi Reyes, was arrested by the police on June 24, 2013, a little over a year ago. And he was accused of solicitation of minors, which is a very serious offense, almost anywhere in the world. But no one came to bail him out. That's the interesting thing about Roman Catholic clergy. Oh, make all sorts of promises to you. It's like the suicide bomber. It tells the kid, you know, you ought to go and blow yourself up. If you do, there's going to be all these wonderful things. There will be blessings for you if you do what I ask you to do. And yet, if the young man or woman is captured in the process of carrying out their crime, they will find no help from the imam, who will simply wash their hands of him. The archbishop would not even bail out the man who was carrying out his disgusting wishes. So the deacon sent an anguished letter dated July 2nd to the archbishop to be delivered to him by hand at his office. It reads, "We have offended God and the church," the letter said, "by sexually abusing children and adolescents for crumbs of money." The deacon wrote that he had agreed to find child victims for the archbishop so that your sexual appetite can be satisfied, but that he was now asking God for forgiveness. Hopefully you will consider asking for God to help you walk away from this evil disease of continually sexually abusing innocent children, the letter said, according to a copy obtained by the New York Times from a Dominican justice ministry official. The deacon sent copies of the letter to Cardinal Jesus Rodriguez, the head of the church in the Catholic Church in the Dominican Republic. The cardinal then carried the evidence to the Vatican, where he met directly with Pope Francis, according to interviews with the Dominican authorities. Now, the right thing to have done the moment he saw the letter would be to have informed the authorities in the Dominican Republic, but the Roman Catholic Church is too despicable for that. No, it's far more worried about its standing with its constituents, with Roman Catholics, and continuing to control and fleece them than it is doing the right thing for children. The meeting with Pope Francis resulted in the Archbishop on August 21st of last year being secretly recalled to the Vatican. Despicable. If you are Roman Catholic, shame on you. If you are a parent and allow your children to attend any Roman Catholic facility, whether it be a school or a church or any Roman Catholic meeting, then I think you are aiding and abetting the sexual abuse of your children. You aren't worthy to have them. 6 days later, the cardinal called the archbishop, the ambassador of Pope Francis to the Dominican Republic, a great friend and a promoter of peace, knowing full well that he not only had, but was continually engaged in the abuse, the sexual abuse of young boys. Neither the cardinal nor the church officials reported the allegations to the local authorities. The country's attorney general said that he first learned about the allegations against Mr. Wesolowski, the archbishop, not from the Roman Catholic Church, not from Pope Francis, not from the cardinal, but from television reports that were broadcast in September, a month after the archbishop was secreted away, that included one of the victims asserting that he had been abused. The district attorney, Mrs. Reynoso, said her investigators had identified four children, aged 12 to 17 at this point, which means that they were between 9 and 11 years old up to about 14 years old when the archbishop had sexual contact with them, and said there were likely many others. As we learned yesterday, the 17-year-old, now 17, was just 14 when he was abused. He has epilepsy. And the Roman Catholic archbishop gave him medicine for his condition in exchange for sexual acts, starting from when the boy was just 13 years old. This is from the testimony of the district attorney of the Dominican Republic. She said that she had no doubt about the credibility of the youth's testimony because it was corroborated by other evidence. "This is the most terrible case I have ever witnessed," said Ms. Reynoso. "He was abusing kids who were living in extreme poverty in exchange for medicines for a child's illness. This is extraordinarily perverse." Indeed it is. Roman Catholicism is an extreme version of perversion. It is very, very perverse. Ms. Reynoso said that the case should have been prosecuted in the Dominican Republic. These children were abused, and their families all live here in the Dominican society. They have a legitimate right to see Joseph Wesloski judged by a jury, not as a diplomat, but for what he really is, a pedophile. The case has reverberated in Poland, where prosecutors have sought to extradite the former archbishop, who holds both Vatican and Polish citizenship. Poland has indicated that another Polish priest, the Reverend Wojciech Gil, who fled the Dominican Republic last year amid similar allegations, that he also abused altar boys in his rural parish, not only in the Dominican Republic, but also in Poland. Wesloski spent time with young boys as the archbishop in the Vatican's beach house. The case has shaken this stalwart Catholic nation, but the church has said almost nothing. We'll return and complete to this story when Shattering Myths resumes after the commercial break. People used to say, "I want my child to go to a Catholic church," said Reverend Rogelio Cruz, a Catholic priest here in the Dominican Republic. Now they say, "No child of mine is ever going to a Catholic church." When will that be the same of Roman Catholic parents everywhere? "No child of mine is ever going to a Catholic church." It is the most perverse, the most deceitful, the most destructive institution ever conceived by man. It's not my opinion either. It's my conclusion. But if you want to know God's perspective on the Roman Catholic Church, read Daniel sometime. It will tell you all about it. Daniel, Yahweh through Gabriel, describes the church that grew out of Rome as the beast, as the most destructive, as the most vicious, as the most deadly, as the most damning and torless institution man has ever conceived. I told you that I'd have an update. After our program yesterday, Pope Francis and the Vatican announced that he was stripping the archbishop of his diplomatic status. Now that means there is at least the potential that he will be extradited and tried in the Dominican Republic. Dateline Baghdad. Iraqi Shiite militiaman machine-gunned minority Sunni Muslims in a village mosque on Friday, killing scores as Baghdad was trying to build a unified government to fight Sunni militants whose rise has alarmed Western powers. You see, the Western powers, and that would be the United States, wants to supply ever more weapons and to engage ever more U.S. bombers to fight on beside and on behalf of the Shiites and the Shiite militiamen, the very people who walked into a Sunni mosque and killed 68 people in cold blood. That's the side that America is fighting on. That's the side that America is arming. I have long said that in Syria, there are only evils. I'm not even certain in Syria that you can define the lesser of two evils, but when it was Islamic Sunni Mujahideen fighting the Assad regime, clearly Assad was better than, can't say less evil, but perhaps not as overwhelmingly evil as those America and Qatar were arming to bring down the Shiite government. Well, in Iraq, the Shia and Sunni are equally repulsive. The problem with America's current involvement is that we're on the side of Shia Islam now in Iraq, and here they're gunning down 68 women and children in a mosque with machine guns. And here the Shiites are engaging Tehran's influence further west. So in Iraq, America is now aiding and abetting Iran. And in Syria, America has provided billions of dollars worth of weapons directly and indirectly to the Sunnis on the other side of that battle. And now America is planning to bomb the Sunni warlords, the Sunni Mujahideen, the jihadists that it has been arming to overthrow Assad. So I suppose now America is on the side of Assad in Syria. You know, when you're clueless as to who you're fighting, when you're absolutely morally bankrupt, without a moral compass, this is what happens to a country. We're now on the precipice of bombing Syria to kill the very Sunni Mujahideen that we armed to overthrow Assad, which means that we're now fighting for the benefit of Assad. And in Iraq, we're now providing ever more arms to the Shias aligned with Tehran, Iran, to bomb the Sunnis that we armed through the Awakening Program. Yeah, the masked gunman, you know that you're a class act. You know that you're on the side of virtue when you wear a black mask. The masked gunman stormed into the mosque in the Sunni village and fired upon the worshippers using AK-47s before escaping on motorcycles. The video broadcast on Iraqi television station showed an apparent aftermath of the attack, with the women screaming and lifeless bodies scattered all over the mosque red carpet. A morgue official in the province north of Baghdad said that initially 68 people had been brought dead and hundreds more severely wounded. It occurred, of course, on Friday when the most Muslims would be in the mosque. This article acknowledges that in this region, Iranian-trained Shiite militias are powerful and act with impunity. So here's America providing weapons and now bombing with American aircraft on behalf of Iraq, when the area in northern Baghdad, the capital, is filled with Iranian-trained Shiite militias, which are both powerful and act with impunity. That sounds pretty stupid to me. What do you think, Glenn?
Good morning, Yada.
Morning. Afternoon.
It's afternoon here. Well, I hate to say this, but I'm afraid you're mistaken again.
All
right.
Oh, wow.
All right. See, we've never been at war with Oceania. We've always been at war with East Asia. And you seem to keep getting that mixed up. How many fingers am I holding up?
Oh, I do not know. Yeah.
you realize I'm talking about 1984, of course.
Yes.
Yeah, it doesn't matter, you know. It can be Shiite, it can be Sunni, it can be this nation state, that nation state, it can be Ukraine.
Doesn't matter. We're never at war with them.
When you're playing Hegelian duopoly, and
yes.
You know, you just create murder. You create monster. You create one monster, and then you have to, you know, fuel the other monster to fight that monster, and then one of the monsters turns and attacks you, and it's all one big Mary Shelley Frankenstein monster nightmare.
You know, and I think the United States government and its military actually thinks that the world belongs to us. Like, for example, Obama announced this morning not only that American manned aircraft would be flying now over Syria, military aircraft flying over Syria, but that they were already doing so, and that he had not nor would not notify the Syrian government that we're doing so. So, Syria is ours. I mean, we have every right, according to the Abominator, to be there. We have every right to re-engage in Iraq. We have every right to invade Afghanistan. We have every right to bomb Libya. But should the Russians bring in an aid convoy to Donetsk and Luhansk, those immoral reprobates.
Well, yeah, hypocrisy and double standards, duplicity are the order of the day. Everything's proceeding according to plan. The border between, you know, nation-state borders are to be erased, to be replaced with, the regions of the globalists and stuff. The border between Syria and Iraq is erased. The border between the U.S. and Mexico is erased. Nation-states have no authority in their mind.
Yeah. Unless there is a border that actually never existed, which was one between Russia and Ukraine, which isn't even marked. I mean, it's never existed, so it's not even marked. There's no fence. There's no markings. There's no cross. There's no nothing to indicate that you moved from Russia into the Ukraine. And there we're saying, there are the border, red line. But no, in the rest of the world, there's no borders because the United States, we own it.
Right.
You know, that we can fly planes right next to the coast of China, but China can't send out intercepts to identify them.
Right. Well, I keep hearing everybody saying how Putin's a chess player, the Russians are playing chess, and we're playing checkers. You know, we've got the Rand Corporation, Tavistock, Carnegie, Ford, all the foundation think tanks, the Alphabet Soup Agency, computers, Army War College. And they think that they can, you know, and they've got the virtual world project, you know, and they think that they can, like, war game everything out, you know, and just, okay, fine, you play chess, but we've got computers and PhD think tanks who, you know, are in session all the time. And, you know, they also think that they can, you know, co-opt, compromise, and manipulate every entity, and that they can induce chaos and then titrate it back, you know, with impunity and instantly. And they can't. They cannot control the current.
No, of course not. You know, Scott said during the break, because I was sitting there mocking the United States, here we're aiding with billions of dollars worth of weapons directly and indirectly the Sunni Mujahideen to overthrow Assad, and now we're going to go and bomb those very Sunni Mujahideen. We're telling Iran that you can't commence its nuclear program, and yet we're bombing on behalf of Iran in Iraq. And Scott says, well, you know, the bottom line here is you either use your military or somebody will wake up and say, why do we really have this? It's really expensive. And someone suggests that we stop funding it. So we got to go use our military to start another war so that we can justify having a military.
Right.
Wrong.
It's wrong, but I know, right? It's
not. Yeah, I agree.
But I think back to, you know, all my time growing up during the Cold War, and, you know, we were given the specter of, the, you know, the sort of Damocles of ultimate, you know, global destruction hanging over our heads the whole time, while the whole time the U.S. and Canada were feeding the Soviet Union, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so they go that game and decided that now it's the time to use proxy wars,
right,
to go around and foment all this chaos and overthrow everything and in order to break down the existing order and reshape everything.
The rise of modern jihadism, at least outside of Israel. In Israel, it's just simply Egypt, the Muslim Brotherhood, the PLO, and the ugly one, Arafat. But outside of Israel and Egypt, the birth of the modern jihadist movement, while it's fueled by OPEC, was really conceived when America decided to fight a proxy war against the Soviet-backed government in Afghanistan. It's there that we deployed the Taliban and
Al-Qaeda. That is the mother of all miscalculations. Thinking
correct.
That they can manipulate Islam the way they've manipulated Christianity. It's the biggest miscalculation they've ever made.
And you've got Jimmy Carter out trying to be a bastion of moral virtue, calling Israel an apartheid nation and rallying behind the terrorists with Hamas, who was the decision maker. You have Zbigniew Brzezinski writing books and giving speeches about how marvelous that idea was. And their operative in the CIA, the man who actually was on the ground and negotiated renting the Taliban and Al-Qaeda from the Pakistani government, he moved from up to the head of the CIA and then to the head of the Department of Defense, the Secretary of Defense. And Gates now is head of the Boy Scouts. I wonder how long it'll be before Boy Scouts get heavy artillery and armored personnel carriers.
Right. It's just crazy. And the naivete of thinking that they can throttle back on this stuff at will, that they can control it.
Right. That you can use pure evil. You can deploy evil like the Taliban, like Pakistan, like Al-Qaeda, to go fight your foe in a proxy war. That you can use that same foe fighting Assad in Syria. That you can arm that foe to keep the Shiite militias that you've armed in Iraq at bay. And then when they don't behave like you want them to behave, then you're going to go bomb them. I mean, how can we be that stupid? And we have learned nothing in the last 15 years. I mean, nothing.
Well, you know what? When there actually is wanton or random terrorism on U.S. soil, the U.S. empathy for Israel and the understanding of its approach to this stuff will become greatly more, you know, much more greatly understood overnight.
Well, empathy for Israel is only going to be among those who embrace the covenant, because most Americans are completely ignorant and deceived in this regard.
Well,
no, I'd have to ask you a question, Glenn. Let me ask you a question, Glenn. Al-Baghdadi, the
Sultan Ibrahim.
Yeah, Ibrahim is his actual name. Was he the leader of a Islamic terrorist organization under Saddam Hussein?
Heck no.
No. Did the Islamic State in Iraq exist under Saddam Hussein?
Heck no.
Did the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria, did it grow out of the organization that was founded by Ibrahim, known as al-Baghdadi, after the U.S. invasion?
Yeah, that's a little better timeline. Yeah.
Yeah, that's when it was conceived. Didn't exist prior to that.
Yeah. And the U.S. invasion, Iraq actually was fairly well westernized and had good infrastructure.
It did.
And relatively few people suffering and dying at the hand of Saddam Hussein back in the day.
Correct, yeah. In fact, the only really mass killing of Saddam Hussein was was part of the Iranian war, and it was against the Kurds because the Kurds, as they are now, sided with the Shiites against the Sunnis. So
I'm still waiting for the Iranian al-Quds forces to team up with the Kurds. And the Kurds aren't nice guys either. They're pretty hard on Christians and other folks, too.
Oh, of course. The Kurds are reprehensible. So are the Iraqi Sunnis and Shias. So are the Iranians Shias. So are all good Muslims.
There's a line in a movie called The Zero Effect, uttered by Ben Stiller, where he's speaking to this main character, and he says, "You do realize that there are no good guys. There's just a bunch of guys, right?" There are no good guys.
You know, if there isn't a good side to support, why are we engaged? What's so amazing in the Iraq situation is we allowed the Christian population. Here's America. It claims to be a Christian nation. So many claim it to be a Christian nation, particularly those who support the military. And we allowed the Christian population under our watch in Iraq to go from 1.3 million down to 60,000. And now it's essentially zero. But we never did respond to protect the Christians. But we did respond to protect the Zoroastrians. We're really weird. Yeah, so in the midst of the Shiite militiamen, which have been trained and armed by Iran, operating with impunity in Baghdad and killing Sunni worshippers, some 68 women and children, in a mosque, the United States, nonetheless, is continuing to call for the formation of an inclusive government. Yes, we're bombing on behalf of the Zoroastrians. Actually, we're doing secret raids to rescue the Zoroastrians. We're bombing on behalf of the Kurds and arming them as if they were their own separate nation. We're arming the Sunnis in Syria. And we're arming the Shias in Iraq. And nothing says peace and inclusion more than giving all of the divided entities weapons. Yes, we are a sane nation. Well, after that happened, this is yesterday, 9 more people were murdered by a suicide bomb attack. This time on a Shia mosque in Baghdad. The attacker detonated his explosive vest during noon prayers, whisking his way to Allah. It comes days after Shia militia were accused of killing over 70 people at a Sunni mosque just northeast. The cities of Karbala and Al-Hila, both south of Baghdad, were also hit by a series of car bombings and suicide bombers. At least 23 people were killed in those incidences and many hundreds wounded. Ah, but now we have the United Nations taking a stand. UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Navi Pillay, condemned the appalling widespread crimes being committed by Islamic State fighters in Iraq. Except none of these crimes were committed, Navi, by the Islamic State fighters. They include targeted killings, forced conversions, abductions, trafficking, slavery, sexual abuse, destruction of places of religious and cultural significance, and the besieging of entire communities. They are systematically targeting men, women, and children. Okay, what else is there? Let's say they are why don't they just say they're systematically targeting people? Men, women, and children, based on their ethnic, no, there's no ethnic issue here, religious or sectarian. Religious or Glenn, I think we need you to go give an English lesson to, and maybe a history lesson, to the High Commissioner for Human Rights at the United Nations. You would think that the head of the United Nations for Human Rights, Navi Pillay, would not would not say that they are systematically targeting men, women, and children. That's pretty much inclusive. Doing so on ethnic basis when there's absolutely no ethnic basis here whatsoever. Religious or sectarian affiliation. Religious or sectarian. Say what?
We live in the days of cowardly word weasels. I mean,
word weasels? That's hard to say.
Word weasels. Okay. Yeah, everything that they have, they're invertebrates.
Invertebrates, and the word weasels are invertebrates, and they congregate at the United Nations and in Washington D.C. The word weasels.
Right. They don't have a spine. They can't begin to speak the truth because they might offend somebody. So all they can do is generate a bunch of ambiguous verbiage that they're just afraid that somebody might be offended.
So you've made me a liar again. Just in, as I pointed out in the opening volume of Yada Yada, that every phyla of the animal kingdom, including all forms of invertebrates, were conceived during the Cambrian explosion, during a 5-million-year period, that I was wrong, there is now a new phyla of invertebrates called the word weevils.
This proves the existence of macroevolution. We now see intergenus evolution. They have 46 chromosomes, but no spine.
Okay. You know, I can't argue with this. This is a brilliant analysis. Once again, I'm awed by your analysis. We have word weasels, a new invertebrate, occupying the United Nations and Washington, D.C. They are systematically targeting men and women, religious and sectarian affiliations. We'll be back after the news and commercial break.